Hey, also, here's the thing. I'm giving a speech to the Tarrant County Libertarian Party on April the 28th. That's Saturday, April the 28th, from 2 to 4 Central Time up there in Fort Worth. So if you're anywhere near the 200 square miles of concrete known as Dallas-Fort Worth, head on out there and I'll see you. It'll be cool. I'll sell you a book. Oh, you can find out all about it at eventbrite.com. Oh, and I guess I'll write up a blog entry, too, at the Libertarian Institute, and at scotthorton.org.
Sorry, I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, y'all. Introducing Daniel Lazare, writing lately for the American Conservative magazine. This one is called, Will the Saudi Kingdom Collapse Under the Resource Curse? Very interesting work. Welcome back to the show, Daniel. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. Oh, yeah. Here's where I also mentioned that you've written lots of interesting things about the Saudis in the past. And people can find that if they use their favorite brand of search engine and combine your name with Saudi Arabia. And that's a fact.
So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's an interesting place.
Yeah. Well, I should ask you, how do you know so much?
Just the usual research methods. I've never been there. I'd love to go.
Hmm. All right. Good deal. All right. So... as wealth gushes from the ground, thrift vanishes, the work ethic shrinks, and policy grows more erratic and extreme. That is the resource curse in a few words there, huh?
Yeah. The parallel I drew, and I hope this isn't too arcane for your listeners. But
Nothing's too arcane for my listeners. They're great, a bunch of brilliant geniuses.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear that. The incredible parallels between Saudi Arabia and 16th century Spain. I mean, Spain, as you know, hit the gusher in the early 16th century with the discovery of the New World and a dramatic inflow of gold and silver from Mexico and Peru. And suddenly, the Spanish throne was rich beyond measure. And what did they do with that money? The king used that money to, number one, to emancipate himself from any kind of parliamentary controls, and two, to embark upon a series of religious wars across Europe, which spread bloodshed, horror, destruction, et cetera, across the continent. The brand of Catholicism that he advanced in the face of the Reformation was an extreme dark version, in some ways the Catholic version of Wahhabism. And the funny thing is, the ironic thing is that all that wealth in the New Land didn't make Spain richer, it made it poorer. So that within a few decades, the country was bankrupt. It was declared bankruptcy a half dozen times by the early 17th century, after which it became an economic basket case, the most economically backward country in Western Europe until the late 19th century. In other words, it was ruined for three centuries or more. Now, what happened to Spain back then is the same thing happening in Saudi Arabia today, where it has benefited from a wealth geyser that's many, many, many times larger than anything Spain saw in Mexico and Peru. And what does it use that money for? It's used it to create the greatest autocracy the world has ever seen and to spread religious terror across much of the world in the form of Wahhabism. So the result is, you know, is terrorism, violence, sectarianism, spreading across the Middle East, Europe, and the United States. And it is due to what's known as the resource curse, an avalanche of unearned wealth, which creates just really strange political byproducts.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how it just goes without saying. I mean, we all know that Norway has a king or whatever. Well, I learned that from a Doug Stanhope special. But everybody knows that the king isn't in charge there, that it's a ceremonial thing left over from olden days. And yet in Saudi Arabia, it just somehow makes perfect sense that you have an absolute monarchy here. And then this blatantly corrupt system where whoever's the second cousin gets to have $1 million or whatever it is here.
Yeah. So the point is that this thing can't end. It can only end in war and bankruptcy. And the U.S. Saudi alliance is just the strangest aspect of it. I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but in how long? I mean, they still have a ton of oil left, don't they?
No one, particularly in the future, is really difficult. But the real strange thing is this U.S. alliance. I mean, the countries are opposite in so many different respects, but the Saudis are the strongest U.S. partner in the Middle East. And as a consequence, the U.S. has allowed the Saudis to essentially dictate policy in this increasingly important part of the world. That just boggles my mind.
Well, and the obvious things are they buy U.S. debt and they buy U.S. weapons and they sell Americans gasoline, at least somewhat, right?
Yeah. And they sell Americans. Yeah. And America then therefore gets to control the world economy by controlling the Persian Gulf. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect marriage, but it's a marriage made in hell. Mm-hmm. It's going to have incredible consequences.
Well, and so here's the thing, too. I was talking with this guy. I'm sorry his name's escaped me for the moment. But he was a real military expert. And I was interviewing him about the war in Yemen. And I was, recycling what I'd heard, I guess, about, Saudis do nothing military. That's just a bunch of pampered princes sitting around polishing their jets or whatever, but not really doing any work. And he said, oh, yeah, no, on the contrary, they have spent a lot of money building a very real modern army with I don't know how many men he said it had, but he said they're very well trained and professionalized now. And it's a whole different game from that kind of old cliche of basically just collecting weapons as trophies, but not really, having the ability to do anything about it. I mean, as bad as it is, having Al-Qaeda as their shock troops may not be as bad as them actually having real wars, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, I still believe the old cliches. I mean, everything it tells me is a do not, it's a army for show only. They're top heavy on royal, jet pilots and have very few ground troops. They have they're short on grunts to actually do the real serious fighting for them.
Hmm. I guess that's what the U.S. Army's for, huh?
Yeah, but after all, who wants to fight for the Saudi royal family?
You know what I don't understand? How come Prince Bandar and all them went along with George W. Bush telling him he was smart to overthrow Saddam? How come they didn't say, no, 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 don't do this? In fact, it's in the WikiLeaks where the king of Saudi Arabia said, I don't understand. It was always you and us working together with Saddam to contain Iran. But now you're handing Iraq to Iran on a golden platter, he said. Not a silver one, but a golden one. I don't know if he screwed up the idiom or he was trying to make a point there. But why didn't they stop him? Why didn't they say, wait, don't you see what's going to happen here? With the whole Shiite supermajority coming to power thing,
they did say that, but George W. Bush was so headstrong, they had no impact.
They really did try to stop him, though. Bandar did.
Oh, yeah. And, Bandar got his deals in return, and Bandar let Bush know that the Americans owed the Saudis big time for going along with this crazy adventure. That's why the U.S. was so helpless when it came to calling the Saudis to account for 9/11. That's why the U.S. was so anxious to blame everybody else except the Saudis, who, of course, were most responsible for the attack.
Well, and they also, especially right during that moment, they didn't want to divert attention from Saddam all day long and trying to conflate him with Osama bin Laden so they could hurry up and get in there. And no, talking about Saudi Arabia would have been a major diversion from the narrative there.
Right. I mean, it really is a bad marriage. You know, it's like something out of, like, you know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Just two partners clawing at one another, but sort of locked in this utterly dysfunctional relationship.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Here's how to support this show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. The audiobook is now available. If you like this show, you'll love the audiobook, I guess, or something. Sign up at patreon.com. You want to incentivize me to do more interviews all the time? Sign up at patreon.com, and through the magic of multiplication tables, I'll make a living doing anti-government propaganda for you here. Sign up for my YouTube channel. It happened, finally. We're living in the future now where it's a done thing. All 4,600 and something interviews are up at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Thank you for your decade worth of patience on that issue. And hey, sign up for the RSS feeds at scotthorton.org or at Libertarian Institute. We got a lot of other great podcasts there at the Libertarian Institute as well. So check all that out. And then find out all about how to donate to the show at scotthorton.org/donate. For your PayPal kind of one-off donations, for $20, you can get the audio book. For $50, I'll send you a signed copy of the paperback of Fool's Errand. For a $100 donation to the show, you get a silver QR code commodity disc. It's the coolest kind of currency I've ever heard of. And anyone who donates, and this is just for this month only, for what's left of it, anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show gets a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. Find out all about that at scotthorton.org. And yes, I accept Zencash and Bitcoin Cash and Litecoins and all those different kinds of digital currencies there as well. If you hate holding on to those digital currencies and you want to get rid of them all, send them to me. And hey, if you read the book and you liked it, or you listened to the audiobook and you liked it, or if you like the show, give me a good review on Amazon, on Audible, on iTunes and Stitcher and those kinds of things. Thanks. All right, I'm sorry. I'm all over the place here talking about Iraq War II and all this stuff. Back to your article here. This resource curse. Well, I don't understand it. It seems like if I, you know, had a natural gas well, then, I mean, I might spend all my money lounging around and skateboarding with my friends, maybe half the time. But then I would also make investments in sound businesses run by other people, at least, even if I was lazy, right? So how come resources are a curse? When you're talking about, it's not exactly free money. You have to do some work to produce it and to get the energy out of the ground and distribute it and whatever.
You have to do very little, very, very little. I mean, you have to bear in mind that Saudi oil wells are abundant. They're very close to the surface. It costs just pennies to extract a barrel of oil, which sells now for $65 on the international market. So the profits are huge. And with those huge profits, you can hire others to run your oil industry for you. You know, Americans, you know, Texans, who are very good at that. And really, you can sit around and do nothing. And not only for a year or two, but for generation after generation. And your kids will grow up doing the same thing and think it's their God-given right to lie on a couch all day. And just not even bother counting the money as it flows in, but, you know, hiring someone else to do that. It's debilitating. The best countries in the world are the ones that are resource poor, and therefore they've had to work and think and plan and invest and invent. And the worst countries are the ones that are resource rich, and have therefore been able to sit on their derrieres and do nothing.
Well, the soon-to-be king, the crown prince now, Bin Salman, has been making a big deal about diversifying their economy because, you know, he may be cruel, but he's no dummy, something like that. So does he have a prayer there?
I don't think so.
I mean, they could go into glass exports.
But you have to have workers to make glass.
Oh, that's what Filipinos are for, right? Yeah.
Well, you can import Filipinos or Bangladeshis, you know, to make the glass and then hire some other people to sell it for you, you know, and then sit back and collect the proceeds. Yeah. It's just a lot easier just to do that with oil. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it, right? Is that their entire workforce, any actual manual labor that needs doing, not even the Saudi poor do that work. Not even the holy poly or whatever you call them out there. It's all foreigners do that work even.
Absolutely, the private sector workforce in Saudi Arabia is 95% foreign born, and if you're a Saudi, if you're a poor Saudi, growing up in some slum, and there actually are big slums in Saudi Arabia, you're focused on one thing, and that is landing a no-show government job that will set you up for life. It may take you a few years. You may have a pull strings. You may have to call upon and suck up to, you know, your third cousin or your fifth uncle or your second, you know, great grandfather, whatever the hell. But you got to somehow land this public job. And once you have that public job, you've got two things. You've got a decent salary, and you've got a couch to sit on and do nothing else but keep that couch warm. Believe me, that is how the country works. The country works on essentially this kind of no-show job system, and it's falling apart. And the more it falls apart, the angrier Saudis get, the more convinced they are the rest of the world is ganging up on them. It is a really demented, demented system. And the U.S. is tied to this thing, you know, by the hip, joined by the hip. Anyway.
Well, so... But now about the trying to diversify the economy, they say they're building this fancy new high-tech city to rival Silicon Valley in the West somewhere, I think, on the Red Sea. And then something, you know, what, grow pecans or some, huh?
but no one built Silicon Valley, right? I mean, Silicon Valley, that's a place on the map.
That's
where,
right,
a lot of smart kids, you know, sort of gravitating to and opening up companies. And eventually it became a big deal, but no one built Silicon Valley.
Right.
So you just can't build this thing. You've got to have, you know, well-educated, you know, well-trained young workers who are hungry and ambitious and have freedom, et cetera, to create all these things. Mm-hmm. Those elements are absent in Saudi Arabia because all those young people are just trying to get one of those no-show jobs I described.
So now, in other words, the best you can tell, there's only a bad and a huge crash coming one day when the price of gas is so low that they can't do anything about it anymore because there's so much diverse supply on the planet, or when somebody invents the most killer solar panel that just makes oil obsolete forever, or whatever it is, at some point they're doomed and there's only a brick wall way out of this, rather than, well, like he's talking about, trying to head this off with, you know, some kind of public works or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the Spain is the story. I mean, Spain went into a deep freeze that lasted for two centuries. It's incredible. I mean, and also Latin America as well. The devastation was enormous. And the amazing thing was it was devastation that was not caused by poverty. It was devastation that was caused by wealth. Really an amazing, it's a difficult concept to wrap your head around, but it's true. So Spain didn't begin to emerge out of that deep, you know, slough until the late 19th century. And even to this day, it still lags behind in many, many crucial respects. The same is true for Latin America. Mm-hmm. So all the Saudi wealth, I think in the end will cause far more harm than good, far more backwardness than progress.
All right, guys, here's who supports this show: The War State, by Mike Swanson, the great Mike Swanson. He'll give you great investment advice, too, at wallstreetwindow.com. His book, The War State, is about the rise of the military-industrial complex after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy administrations. You'll learn a hell of a lot. It's really great. And again, wallstreetwindow.com to find out what he thinks you need to do with your money in these volatile times. And I'm sure some of what he'll tell you is you got to have at least some percentage of your savings in precious metals. And when you go to get your precious metals, you go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's rrbi.co. rrbi.co. And if you buy with Bitcoin, they take no premium at all. Of course, then there's Zencash, zensystem.io, to read all about how it works. It's a brand new digital currency. It's also a format for sending encrypted messages and documents, and has all kinds of great things going for it. I know digital cash people who really think it's great. Zencash at zensystem.io. And Hussein Badakhshani is back. He wrote this great book, No Dev, No Ops, No IT. And it's about how to run your technology business like a libertarian. No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. And expanddesigns.com. You want a brand new website? 2018 model looks good for everybody if you're looking at. You go to expanddesigns.com/Scott and you save $500. Okay, so then switching back to some current politics here, MBS came and did a big PR tour of the United States, including a big spot on 60 Minutes and all of this. And, you know, one of the things he did, I'm sure you noticed, was talk with Jeffrey Goldberg and, you know, really, again, demonize Iran. It was amazing the way Goldberg, well, only kind of amazing, the way Goldberg let him slide on Yemen and all that. But, you know, he said Iran, you know, they're worse than Hitler. The Ayatollah is worse than Hitler because Hitler wanted to conquer all of Europe, but the Ayatollah wants to conquer the whole world. And so, I mean, I guess I'm not sure what a good question would be. I mean, what comes to my mind is, do you fear like I do that this guy believes his own BS at all? Or, nah, don't worry, it's clearly just BS.
No, I the former. I think the really horrible thing is he really believes what he's saying. I mean, these people have developed, have nurtured this this paranoid worldview. The Saudi regime rests on two things: oil and Wahhabism. And Wahhabism is this very pernicious ideology, and they have it's very sectarian, and they have essentially declared war on Shiite Iran, not to mention Shiite Syria and Shiite Hezbollah. There simply is no telling where this will end, but there's no reason to think that reason will prevail.
Yeah, you got that right. Well, and especially this week, and, you know, I don't know what to do about this because I keep beating this dead horse, and I know you've done so much work on this as well. I think that we can't really call it off until you have some greater plurality of Americans who understand basically that our government has us taking the side of the American people's enemies, Al-Qaeda, in order to fight the American empire's rivals for dominance of the Middle East, Iran, which actually never did anything to us. And that, you know, when they say, I mean, you look at the current situation now where they go, oh, my God, look, Iran is dominant in Iraq and Syria. And never mind what happened the day before yesterday or the last 15 years here and how it got that way. But Iran, Iran, Iran. How can you and I make an argument that we have to call off the intervention now, right when the intervention has not only created a couple of 10,000 bin Ladenites or more, but it's also helped to enhance the power of their enemies in the name of fighting them, in the Iranians and Hezbollah that you mentioned, that the Saudis and the Israelis, of course, are absolutely obsessed with? It seems like our only argument really is, yeah, but look who caused it, right? Show me an Iran hawk who's not at fault for this. I don't know what else to say because, yeah, Iran is more, you know, dominant in Iraq and Syria than before. But I don't care about that. And I got to blame the guys who caused it on the American side first because I'm an American. But so it really leaves us in a bad position, right? In a real quandary that right when everything is absolutely at its most horrible, our argument can only be that America can only make it worse and we got to stop now. But nobody else wants to hear that. Everybody else, I don't know, everybody else, the population, certainly everyone in Washington, D.C. and in the Pentagon wants to hear that, well, now's our chance to finally fix that, right? That's what John Bolton's going to say, is we just got to get rid of the Ayatollah and then everything else will be all right.
Yeah, I think it's very important to distinguish between Washington and the Pentagon on one hand and the American people on the other hand. I mean, the average man in the street or woman in the street, has no idea what's going on. I mean, doesn't give a damn about either country, Iran or Saudi Arabia, and doesn't want his or her kids going to war. That's the really important part. I mean, it's not the kids of John Bolton or Donald Trump who will fight this war, right? I mean, it's the kids from, like, you know, some tiny little burg in West Virginia or Texas that are going to, you know, putting their bodies on the line and coming back crippled and maimed. It's insane. I mean, the U.S. is just caught up in this web of imperial alliances. It can't think straight. And consequently, there is a real war fever that is raging. And rational analysis has been shoved aside. If you read the press today, it's just out of control. Yeah. It's amazing.
You know, I actually got a chance to hang out with Ron Paul yesterday. He interviewed me on the Liberty Report, and we were sitting around talking afterwards a little bit, and we talked about the Amal militia bombing of the American Marines and the French Marines, I think they were, in Beirut in 1983. And how it's really great, actually. It's in Ron Paul's book, A Foreign Policy of Freedom. It's a collection of speeches. And there's a speech where he says, Reagan, don't put the Marines in Beirut. And then he says, Reagan, get the Marines out of Beirut before something bad happens. And then the next one is, see, I told you, you got to get the troops out. And then the next one is, congratulations, Mr. Reagan. You finally made the right decision and ended up pulling out of Lebanon there. And so I was, you know, reminding him of that, how I had read that in the book. And he said, you know, Ronald Reagan in his memoirs said that he didn't want to cut and run and he's a tough guy and all this macho Republican stuff and whatever. But he realized that, in his words, the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics just precluded the possibility that America could fix things by picking and choosing winners in these situations, and that we really had to just forget it. And that, you know, and then Dr. Paul lamented how, you know, Republicans will quote Reagan on anything where he agrees with them, but when he says something like that, they want to ignore it. You know, the rest of the time, he's their great sage of wisdom. He finally says something wise, and they don't want to pay attention.
Well, it's pretty amazing, isn't it, when Ronald Reagan is now a paragon of rationality compared to the, to the people in Washington today.
Jelly beans and Alzheimer's and all.
Yeah, it's amazing. But I must just stop you at one point. I mean, the irrationality of politics in the Middle East is thoroughly matched by the irrationality of politics in the United States.
You got that right.
I mean, this is really very important. I mean, and you know, an energy policy is at the basis of this whole thing. And you're in Texas, right?
You're in Austin.
Yeah, and energy policy, oil, America's consumption of energy is just off the charts. And with remarkably little effort, it could rein it in dramatically. And if it did so, it would send the price of oil crashing through the floor. It would completely, you know, bankrupt all the oil producers in the Middle East, and would also serve at least to kind of, you know, to tamp down the fires in the Middle East. But the U.S. Chooses instead to, you know, to maintain, you know, its sky high oil consumption, as, you know, it's kind of a gift of God, a divine right, and prefers, you know, to pour in literally trillions of dollars into the Persian Gulf in order to throw oil on the fire, mm-hmm. to mix matters. Why does Trump know love MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, so much these days, the crown prince? Because he's buying U.S. weapons. And what do U.S. weapons do? But, you know, this is just to pump up these flames to an ever higher level. It's mm-hmm. this, the mind reels. I mean, it really, this is really a 1914 moment, yeah. you know, where the world is spinning out of control, and all sides are pitching in to contribute to the collapse.
Yeah, you know, I used to be such a conspiracy theorist and like, the Skull and Bones is behind it all or whatever. I kind of wish they were. Now it seems like such a free for all that, you know, no one's really driving this ship, this empire, and whoever can, you know, tweak an interest this way or that way at any given point can change the course of history. And it's really just about some airplane sales, right? And where the U.S. national interest doesn't even exist compared to special interests getting what they want.
But the way the press is falling into line is amazing. I mean, everything, the CNN, the New York Times, Washington Post, they're all falling into line. They're all, you know, playing the same tune, and no one's forcing them to. That's the amazing thing. No one has a gun to their head, but they're just doing it anyway. They're all playing the same damn tune, and it's so reckless and self-destructive. I'm just beside myself.
Yeah. Well, keep writing about it, because the rest of us are counting on you, Daniel.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, sir. That's Daniel Lazare, everybody, at the American Conservative Magazine. This time, will the Saudi kingdom collapse under the resource curse? Hey, I want to add on a special thanks to the heroic Ron Paul, the greatest American hero ever, in my estimation, for interviewing me on his show, The Liberty Report, with the great Dan McAdams as well. It was really great. They interviewed me on Monday, and it ran on today, Wednesday. I don't know what day you guys are hearing this, but ran on Wednesday. You can find it on YouTube.com, and I'll blog it and all that. We talked about Syria and Afghanistan and other things. Libertarianism. So thanks, Ron. You're great.